Welcome to the round 14 Supercoach Coach podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined, as per usual, by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. It was a good week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. First round of the buys done and dusted, and with it, Supercoach Coach community lifted a whole bunch in the league stakes. So we'll reveal how we went in a sec, but we'll introduce our guest for this week. Faz, welcome back to the show, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Thankfully, my team didn't fall apart after the first buy, so I can still hold my head up high this week.
You normally make some good ground over this buy period, so hopefully you can make some ground again this year, Faz. On this week's show, the main focus of the week is going to be the round 14 players to trade out, so players on the buy who we're looking to side swap, and as well as that round 13 players to trade in. So those players fresh off the buy, we're looking very much forward to trading in players that we don't have to deal with donut-wise next week. So that'll be the main focus of this week's show. Before we get into it, though, we'll go through with a personal and league update. So Faz, why don't you start us off with how you went over the weekend?
Yeah, sure thing. I scored 1980 for the week, so I was pretty happy with that. Round 13 was one of my worst ones for the bye. I had Dusty and Montagna up forward. I had Gaz and I had Pendlebury, Rance down back. So it was sort of missing quite a few of my usual on-field players. So I was pretty happy to scrape through with almost a 2,000 score.
Mark, how'd you go, mate?
Pretty good week, I think. I scored 2065, which was about 1,200 for the week, and ranking rose to 671, which is my highest ranking of the year. So halved my ranking pretty much, first week of the buys. Let's hope I can do it again this week, because round 15 might be a little bit tricky for my team. Yeah, a lot of my uniques went really well this week, like backline players like Bartel and McVay. Barlow crushed it and went with the very risky option in the end of trading Nick Nat to Steph Martin. And Martin posted 142 on debut, so that was very massive. I missed the Dangerfield captain because I went Rocky vice-captain, 130, had to lock that in. No real regrets there, but I think that was pretty much the difference between my score and your score this week, mate.
I was hoping for a bigger week. Truth be told, the players on field for me this week were a little bit disappointing. As I highlighted in last week's show, I actually have quite a lot of players missing over the next two rounds. I was hoping to make a little bit more of a dint in the rankings, but nonetheless, still pretty happy with the result. So I scored 20.
So you were hoping to go up more than 1,000 places?
I was hoping to score more than just 50 points more than you, Mark.
So not just versus everyone else, just versus me.
Yeah, you know, we've got this rivalry thing going on the show, and I want to keep my nose in front, mate. We talked about the three-week period being regarded as one round. It's hard to sort of get a feel of how each of us are going, you know, until all three rounds are played, because as you'll see in the next two rounds, I'm going to have a lot of players missing, and you'll come back with a vengeance. So I was hoping.
Have you got Montagna?
No, I don't.
Well, I've got Cochin, Martin, and Montagna back this week, and I know they're three of my uniques against you, so if that makes you feel any better.
That's precisely what I mean, Mark. I was hoping for a little bit more than 50 points. So yeah, I scored 21-14, like you said. It's not a bad score, and I certainly should be reasonably happy with it. But, you know, I had Pretty 76, Wines 81, Gray 78, Wingard 78 as well. So lots of, you know, relatively disappointing performances from my premiums. Dangerfield as a vice captaincy, as has been my policy for most of the year, worked out pretty well. Into 514th, Mark, so I did shoot past you. In the last 3 weeks, went from 3,900 to 1,500 to now sitting in the top 500. Pretty happy.
Just to correct you there, mate, you're not actually in the top 500. But
you can feel the envy. In terms of a league update, very, very big news. I think, you know, only probably a month ago, Mark, we were just celebrating our three leagues cracking into the top 20. Then this week, we have the second, third, and fourth ranked leagues in the competition. Very, very exciting, Mark.
Order has returned to the world. This is as it should be, mate.
This is why people hate us, probably.
Yeah, for sure there's other reasons. But pretty proud of that. And it has been an exciting week. And maybe all our teams are stacked like yours, mate, and just going to go hard in round one through the byes. So as you said, it is a three-week round. We'll be interested to see where we sit in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. We had 7 of the top 9 scoring leagues for the week. So absolutely massive and definitely points to, you know, hopefully the Supercoach coach community thinking through the bye period a little bit better than the other communities out there. Hopefully we can keep it up over the next 2 rounds and we don't actually slip back down. We have now 12 of the top 100 leagues overall. So very, very happy. And in terms of a group update, our top score in our Supercoach coach group was Bryce's Ball Bursters with a score of 22-14. So huge week for him. And he rose to 3,218th. I think it goes without saying we are extremely, extremely happy. So hopefully that sets a good tone for this week's show. We move on to the questions. And before we get into specific trade-in targets, we start off with a general trade question. This question's from Mitch Hook on Twitter, or MT Hook. Trades dilemma, how many should we be aiming for to have post the bye rounds? A, if we're going for league glory, or B, if we're going for the overall rank. So we did get actually quite a few questions regarding how many trades we should be holding and how aggressive to go in this bye period. So I thought it'd be a good time to address it.
I think that's a very difficult question, mate. I think it really is team dependent, and like, how many trades do you need to actually upgrade and how many trades do you need to get the players on field this week? I really think that you'd probably want to have at least 6 coming out of the buys this year. I think if you're getting under 6, then you're going to need a lot of things to go right for your team regarding injuries, players being put out to pasture, and having a really deep bench as well.
Faz, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, when I went through and sort of plotted out my trades that I'd be hoping to make through the buys, I think I came up with 8 to finish with. So it's probably a little bit more conservative than most teams. Don't actually have a fully upgraded team at the end of the buys. I still have guys like Kerridge and Liberatore in my team if I go with that plan. I wouldn't want to be going much below 6, I don't think. And one factor there would be how aggressively have you traded it with your bench. I know a guy for me that I'm looking at pretty strongly is Ruggles in my back line. He's got himself up to 270k now, so there is some value there if I downgrade him. But the options to trade him to just look so poor right now that I think that the money I make now will quickly sort of be forgotten once I get into the later part of the year. I'll be forced to make trades for 1 week injuries because I've got Caden Brand on the bench now. Whoever I trade in probably won't be getting too many games either, and I think it could come back to bite you if you go too aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you bring up with that back bench, and it's something that's definitely influenced how I'm looking to deal with my team this week and over the next couple of weeks. I've obviously got Brand as well, and I'm actually probably looking to get rid of him. His form in the VFL hasn't really been outstanding. I think Hawks have had the opportunity to bring him in the last few weeks, and they haven't. So I think that if the opportunity arises, I really wouldn't mind strengthening that back bench, because I've got like Collins and Brand, which is very similar to your situation, Faz, and I'm just not all that excited to have Collins come on the field, and I know I'm going to get a bunch of short-term defensive injuries, so I'd really like to get a Tippenwadi or a Adams back there if I could as well, because I think that having a strong bench is going to be pretty important.
Yeah, I think bench is a big determinant. If I was to give a general figure, I think if you're going for league glory, I think you'd want probably something like 8 trades with 8 rounds to go. And, you know, if you don't need to spend any, that's potentially 2 a week during the final series. If you're going for overall rank, I think, you know, 6 is pretty comfortable. I wouldn't want to go below 6 ideally, because you know you can still have opportunistic trades come up over the next 8 rounds that you might want to seize on. For example, Luke Dalhouse will be really cheap eventually, so I think you want to leave yourself open to be reasonably flexible, and so I wouldn't want to go below 6. But the more trades you carry, the better, as long you have a fully upgraded team. If your team's not fully upgraded, I would probably trade as hard as I could to get a fully upgraded team if I was going for the overall rank. And if that meant potentially going to 5 to complete your last midfield upgrade to Hanbury, I would probably still do it.
Yeah, I think that there's a slight difference, though, if you're looking at Faz's situation where he'd be carrying Kerridge at the F6 spot, or you've got like an Adams or Waller at the defensive 6 spot. I think in those situations, it's a lot different than upgrading a midfield rookie. So you could probably save trades by carrying those guys through the season. You're not 100% have to upgrade in that position if those players are doing okay.
Yeah, agree with that. Having said that, though, if I had seven, I'd still be tempted to get rid of Adams and trade him up to Doherty this week around the buys, for example. I mean, you need to have the funds for it, but you don't even have to go to Doherty. Even Simpson, that's, you know, 20 points per game for the next potentially 9-10 rounds. So wouldn't go too much into our shell yet, but having said that, wouldn't go crazy either. All right, we'll move on to an injury-related question now. This question's from Skywalker FC or at Seeker Supercoach, asking about Daniel Wells. There's rumors going around that he might miss a few weeks due to ongoing like calf Achilles sort of issue. Question is, if he's going to miss this round and next round, is he still worth keeping as an F6 or as bench cover, or would you trade him out now?
Personally, in my situation, if I trade him out, it doesn't actually help me this week because I have a player, like a forward would be going onto the bench that wouldn't be able to come onto the ground. So it helps me a little bit with loopholing, but doesn't give me an extra player. And he was going to miss him round 15 anyway. So I think I'm leaning towards just keeping him for the 2 weeks and just seeing how he is after that. Hopefully I don't need to trade him, but if I do, I'll deal with it then, just because it doesn't make that much difference to me trading him right now. But if he does for your team and makes a huge difference on the buys, then look, if you're going to trade him, this is the week to do it, even though he has looked amazing in his last three games.
I'm very much in the keep camp. I think unless you're really dealing with donuts, I wouldn't trade Wells out. And even then, if you're dealing with donuts, I'd be tempted to trade out the other players that are missing, just because, as we'd mentioned, he's got really high scoring potential. And we did a podcast fairly recently about top six forwards, and both of us nominated him as a top six forward at the moment with Dalhouse out. So considering that, even if he's out 2-4, I'd be very tempted to just hold through that period.
Yeah, one of my friends, Gary, who I mentioned recently on the podcast, traded him out about 3 or 4 weeks ago and has been regretting it badly ever since. So definitely has a bit of burn factor to him.
I mean, when he's playing his best, he's their number one midfielder. I'd say if he's uninjured, he's their number one midfielder. They've got some, you know, strong midfielders, Cunnington, Zeebel and stuff, but his class and finesse is pretty much unparalleled in their team, especially since Del Santo isn't, you know, that same gun that we knew in the past. He definitely is a standout in the midfield. All right, on to the next question. This one is with regards to rookies. I was looking at rookies that are coming fresh off the bye, those that have played games already, and the only player that I could put my finger on is Tom Phillips. He played the round before Collingwood went on the bye, and we had mentioned him previously. He's a mid-forward, which is nice. I think the good part about that mid-forward flexibility is that if he does eventually get dropped, having a rotating donut that can slot into your midfield or into your forward line to get like a good emergency score on field can be quite a plus as well. But you definitely want him to be named this week and hopefully next week as well if you're picking him up. Thoughts on Phillips?
Yeah, the reasons that you mentioned are exactly why he's a very good chance of making my side, almost even if he gets dropped. I guess if he's going to get dropped, I'd probably just bring in Reed instead, because he's at least, I might get one game out of him, but just that ability to swing Petrarca into my midfield and cover stuff through DPP for the rest of the year is a huge, huge advantage. And that player, whether they play or not, is not really an issue for me.
So if there's a tempting mid forward that we haven't seen, you know, play his debut game this weekend, if he's a, you know, round 13 bye player, I'd be very tempted to select them. Not knowing who they are or any of their attributes, I'd be fairly happy selecting them over Tom Phillips if he doesn't get selected, for example.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you just mentioned Sam Reed before. He does play his third game this week, and he will cause more round 15 bye headaches, which I know a lot of us are facing already. With that in consideration, do you still see him as a viable selection?
I guess if he is named this week and Phillips isn't, then I'd probably take Reed, because Phillips probably wouldn't be named the next week anyway, so it's not actually going to help you. Reed is very much a mature age player. His scoring doesn't seem awesome, but I know that GWS wouldn't mind maybe an extra big body in their forward line over the next rest of the season, and he's got a bit of experience and an older head. So, look, when Stevie J comes back, he may be the first one out. So I don't think his job security is awesome going forward, but I guess that if Phillips isn't playing, then he might come into consideration.
Off the rookies now, we're looking at the round 14 trade-out targets. So these are players that are facing the bye this week and are really marginal sort of selections or premiums moving forward, or they're rookies that score well enough to potentially be a keeper as your D6 or as bench cover as D7 or F7. So we'll get into those players now. The first question that we have in this category is from Billy Brown, asking about Ollie Wines and Tom Liberatore.
I don't have to tell you, but Wines has been very disappointing this season. Only the four scores above 100. Yep. I looked this up, and this is his lowest average for a season since his debut year in the comp. So, unfortunately, the prediction...
Not injured. Not injured.
The predictions that this was going to be the breakout year look like they mightn't be coming to fruition. So, yeah, I think that, you know, there's enough of a gap between what Ollie Wines is scoring and what the premiums are scoring that this is probably a good opportunity this week to move him, you know, pivot him to somebody that is getting that sort of 105 average at least. I think that's enough of a benefit for your team to make the trade.
If I didn't have Ollie, I'd probably be potentially looking to get rid of Libba this week. We'll talk about some of the targets a little bit later, but I'm not very enthused by some of the trade-in options in the midfield this week, which might hold me back a little bit from making that move. But yeah, I think, look, it sucks to have to trade him at such a cheap price, but I think Ollie has to go and Libba should be 50-50 for most teams.
Yep, agree with that. Ollie definitely has to go. And to be honest, I have Libba in, you know, the same camp as well. I think the good thing about Libba is that he has shown a little bit more upside at times this year. He's had 5 games above 110. So the hope is that, you know, you could potentially trade him out for more than 490,000. But I wouldn't be confident on him averaging much past 100 anyway. So if you're looking at an ultra premium, you'd want to move him out anyway. You'd only really consider keeping players like this if you're super strapped for trades or super strapped for value and you're struggling to upgrade these sort of blokes.
Yeah, I think that the other example of why you might hold him off is Hanbury is going to be under 550 and after one more game. So I know it doesn't work with buy strategy and it's a bit awkward, but Libba to Hanbury for about 40K would be a pretty good deal in a couple of weeks.
Because what you're doing is sort of side swapping anyway. You do not really have to trade these blokes to a midfielder. I understand what you're saying before, Mark, about it being, you know, slightly less attractive to trade these blokes because of the midfield options fresh off the bye this week. But I think because you only have the top 18 scorers play anyway, doesn't really matter whether they're playing midfield or forward, or, you know, you can trade in a forward this week and then pivot out a forward back into the midfield next week and pick up your premium midfielder fresh off the bye next week. So, you know, that's sort of my plan this week, is I could bring in Martin Montagna and next week bring in my midfielder in Treloar or Hanbury or somebody off the round 14 bye. So I think you can be a little bit more flexible in terms of the premiums you're trading in. It doesn't have to be midfielder for midfielder, as long as by the time you get out of the bye period, you've traded back so that your team structure is reset for the remaining 8 rounds.
You must be pretty confident in backing your team, mate, if you keep trading in my points of difference.
I've got plenty of trades up my sleeve, mate. I got really lucky with injuries this year, as you've known. So I've got a couple extra trades on you to be fluffing around, thankfully. All right, the other trade out candidates that we're looking at are Chad Wingard at 472,000. So it's not like he's at massive value, but, you know, with Montagna, for example, at 470, you could potentially sideswap Wingard to Montagna. The other players that I have here are all rookies, actually. So Marcus Adams, Tipping Woody, Petrarca, and Burn Jones, they're all above 300,000. Could make a case potentially for keeping all of them as cover, or because you don't need any more of that trade in value to upgrade. How would you prioritize these guys in terms of in and out?
That's a very, very tricky question that you're raising there, mate. I could see a situation where I could keep Adams, Tipper, and Petrarca all in my team and rotate them into one on-field position. I'm, for some reason, really loath to get rid of Petrarca just because of his dual position and decent scoring. I'm also really loath to get rid of Adams and Tipper. I'd like at least one of them on my bench. Burn Jones I'd probably be a bit more inclined to get rid of because he has had a few more like really down games where he's not 100% reliable as bench cover. I think I'd definitely keep Wingard, though. He's had pretty good form over the last month.
Excluding Wingard, just dealing with the rookies, I probably have them in the order of their average in terms of the priority to keep them. So Adams averaging close to 84 points a game, I think, is a fine guy to have at D6. So I'd hold on to him. Petrarca I really like, but personally I'm probably going to be trading him out this week just because I need the value to come from somewhere. But you know, averaging 77, covering two positions is pretty great. Tipper, I think he's averaging 76, but that price at 384K just looks too good to pass up on. So I'd be trading him out. And then Darcy Byrne-Jones, I think Mark made a good point there. I think he's probably at the tip of his price roller coaster. I think it's more than likely to drop off a bit. He's got a break even of 92. Doesn't seem to have kept up the scoring that he started his first few games with. So I think DBJ can probably go this week.
Agree with that assessment. DBJ definitely. Adams, Tipper, Petrarca, keep or trade really depends on, you know, how much you need the value. We move on to the actual trade-in targets, and this is what we're waiting for, fellas. This is the real meat of the show this week. We kick off this category with a question from Shane Campbell, or Shane C3172 on Twitter. Can you rank your top upgrade targets whose buys were in round 13 for each line? So we'll go through the back line, the midfield, and the forward line, and pick preferably a top two from each of us that we'd like who are buy free for the remainder of the year. So we'll start off in the back line, and Joe Huddler actually asked a question regarding back line trading targets off the buy, and he asked for two out of Doherty, Simpson, Rance, and Laird for the remainder of the season. So I thought we could use that as a starting point. And then the only real other player that I had in the back line outside of those four was Jeremy Howe, who we've already mentioned a few times this season after just killing it moving into the back line.
I think my top two would be Doherty and Simpson. I think they just really stand out that they could potentially average over 100, whereas I doubt that the others would. I have too many Tigers in my team, so I won't be taking Rance. Laird is very much in consideration.
First?
I'm actually going to go for the other two. I think Rance and Laird for me are the ones. I just find that from history, the back line seems to be the place where players fluctuate the most. I know Cade Simpson's had some good scoring in the past, but he's never actually averaged above 95 for a season. So that just has me a bit hesitant to want to be paying, you know, what's he, 528. Doherty's at 575. So that's just a lot of money to be spending. I think the value that you get from Rance and Laird, two guys in the 470 range, I think is probably worth it. Even if their scoring might be a couple of points less, I don't see there being a huge gap between all of those players. So I'll just go for the value picks.
Can I just say on that, I just think maybe the defensive tagger has gone completely out of fashion, so maybe that might not be the case going forward. I just wanted to put that out there.
That's a good point.
But we've also seen changes in game style throughout the course of a season before, and players not getting tagged at the start of the season, all of a sudden getting tagged at the end of the season, points going to the forward line that all of a sudden dissipate as the season goes on. So I'm definitely still wary of the fact that they could potentially be tagged or they could be impacted moving forward. Having said that, if I were to rank them based on scoring potential, it'd still be Doherty 1, Simpson 2, Rance I think is 3. I don't think he's had especially brilliant season so far. His attacking play hasn't been a highlight so far, but he's still averaging, you know, 98.4, so I think his upside's really good. And then Laird, despite getting a heap of possessions, he can sometimes struggle to convert that into Supercoach points. I think his 74 that he got in round 11 was off the back of 30 disposals. So that concerns me a little bit, although I actually had him, you know, right up there in terms of scoring potential previously. So, you know, I guess he has some upside as well. And then Howe last, just because there's a bit of uncertainty over his position. If I was picking based on value, though, I would have Rance 1 and Laird 2 and wouldn't touch Doherty or Simpson. So if you're strapped for cash, don't even think about Doherty or Simpson, because Laird and Rance are both very, very good picks. All right, we'll move on to the midfield now. Again, we've got a starting point to go off, and this question's from Daniel on Facebook. How would you rate the premium midfielders coming off the bye this week, looking at the likes of Pendlebury, Stevens, Cochin, Sloan, Treloar, and Sidebottom? And I've just chucked Ablett in there, of course, for anyone who just happens to not have Ablett. Because it's the midfield and it's a lot harder to choose, and maybe Ablett and Pendlebury already are sitting at the top. Let's do a top four.
I'm going to go with Sloan and Treloar are the ones that I'm seriously considering. Already got Koch, seems a little bit expensive. All of those guys are decent picks, but Sloan and Treloar are the ones that stands out, and Sloan probably in particular.
Yeah, Sloan's a guy I'm looking at very hard this week. I've had him in the past, and he's just a great footy player to watch and have in your team and to root for. So he's one that I've sort of had earmarked for a few weeks now and will probably be coming in. Sidebottom I like because of the value. He's just at 534,000, and he's averaging as high as Treloar and even higher than Sloan is for the season. So I think that could be a good pick. His break-even's 155 as well. So as you mentioned earlier, you don't have to necessarily do midfield to midfield. He could be a guy to sort of pick up next week, potentially for even less.
if I were to be doing a top five of the blokes we mentioned based on scoring potential, it'd be Pendles, Ablett, and then I think for me it's a clear Treloar. I think he's been solid, but he hasn't had as many absolutely massive games as we know he's capable of. I think he's had one huge game where he scored.
He's got 167, I think, Marcus.
Yep.
But if you actually look outside of that 160, like, has he even had another game over 110?
He's had four other games above 110.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just looking at his stats the other day, he seemed to be like a lot of scores around the 100 mark, and it was just sort of his average bumped up by that one big score.
Collingwood definitely dropped off toward the bye, I think, the last few rounds. But when they were on fire, from rounds 5 to rounds 9, 115, 120, 106, 169, 115. So, like I said, this is going off upside and potential value. I think he's the one that's most likely, I think, out of the bunch to go 115. Having said that, we've seen Cochin do that in the past before, and Sidebottom. Sure. Yeah, and Sidebottom really not too far behind as well. So I'd probably have Sidebottom after Treloar and then Cochin just after that. I could be wrong on Cochin, though. I could be underselling him, but he has been inconsistent in seasons past in terms of Supercoach anyway.
Not this season.
He's done very well since you brought him in, Mark. I definitely agree with that. I can hear the smile in your voice.
And I think Salone with the Crows draw really stands out to me as someone that could definitely average 115, has the upside. My concern is that they come up against the Blues and the Pies in the next 4 weeks or so, and both of those teams play taggers, and like, who else are they going to go to?
I think if I was looking at value, then it'd be Treloar number one. He's pretty much the same price as Sloane, and then followed by probably Sidebottom, then Sloane. Very, very close nonetheless, and I don't think you'd go too far wrong picking any of these blokes.
The beauty of the midfield, you can't really go wrong.
Except if you pick Wines. All right, we'll move off the midfield now and into the forward line. And we didn't get any questions specifically about the forward line, but I've listed the four blokes I have here, and if you think of anyone else, just chuck them in. Nick Riewoldt, Lee Montagna, Brett Delidio, and Dusty Martin. So I'll start off with this one. Dusty Martin, obviously the clear number one here. Brett Delidio, just because we know his upside, and he's a little bit younger than Montagna. Montagna after that, and then Riewoldt last as the key position forward would be how I'd have it in terms of scoring potential. In terms of value, obviously Montagna clearly number one, Delidio not far after. Martin, even though he's priced so well, deserves his price tag. Clearly, Martin over Riewoldt. Riewoldt's set to plunge. His break-even's 170, but he's still at 530, so not tempting for now.
I totally agree with everything you just said, mate. It's kind of really disappointing to have Montagna in my team already, just because now everyone's going to have him, whereas he seemed like a really good point of difference about a month ago. So, yeah, I'll probably be bringing Delidio in because he's the one out of those top three that I don't have. Riewoldt, no. He's having a monster season. Really impressed with him this year, but I wouldn't be bringing him into my Supercoach team.
Mate, it scares me that you're bringing in Delidio mid-season again, because last time you did that, it bloody punished.
Oh yeah.
All right, Faz, how would you rank this?
I think Martin's the clear number one. He's having his career best average. Another thing I noticed just looking him up before the show, he's missed four games so far in his career so far, so that's pretty impressive. I think you could sort of pencil him in for 22 this year, but I already have Martin. I've already got Montagna as well, so Delidio's the guy that I think is a great get as well. Last time he averaged under 100 for a season was back in 2007, so jeez. I would say we can probably be pretty safe to say he'll pick up those extra 3 points and at least get his average up to the 100 mark, and for the rest of the season I'd say 105 average, or maybe even 110 isn't out of the question. He's that good of a player.
So if you had the cash to bring in Delidio over Montagna, the $45,000 didn't make a difference, how would you blokes rate Delidio v Montagna, considering you both have Montagna?
I'd probably take Montagna just because of the injury concerns around Delidio.
I think Delidio's scoring potential is enough better than Montagna's that I'd probably take the risk and go with Lids.
I suppose Montagna does have injury concerns as well with his age, and he did miss games the last few seasons.
Yeah, I know he had a tight hamstring earlier in the year, but didn't actually miss a week, whereas Delidio missed several weeks with a quad that seemed to really take a long time to get better.
And Montagna has had four scores above 110 and only one score below 80. So he is very, very consistent so far this year.
I think another factor to take into consideration is the fact that St Kilda have a really good draw and Richmond are out of the finals. That really does worry me. If they were still in finals contention, I'd be a lot happier bringing even Rance in this week, because I've already got Cochin. I'm going to have Martin. If I add Delidio, that's going to be very Tigers heavy.
All right.
But sorry, there's just not a lot of options outside of those guys. Like, I feel having Montagna and Dusty already, I'm sort of boxed into getting Delidio.
All right, that actually wraps up the core or the crux of this week's show. We do have another question here from at Footy Funk. Can you guys include a captain segment in your show? So I don't know if we're going to dedicate the time to research all the captain's options and all the permutations of best VC and C combo for the week. But what we will do is to round out each week's show, we will mention who we're thinking of captaining or vice-captaining this week. So if I could put you all on the spot, because you hadn't seen this run sheet previously, and it's the first week we're doing it, but you may have said it already anyway. So I'll start off with mine, because I had thought about it. Dangerfield vice-captain for me, and Ablett captain, and that's just the putting the number one players of vice-captaincy sort of policy, and that really only left Ablett for me. How about you guys?
Dangerfield is becoming like Ablett in the sense that when he's growing so big, you just have to make him the vice captain just so that you don't miss one of the 223s or whatever he got a couple of weeks ago. And with Gary to follow on the Sunday, I think that's a fairly obvious choice. I've got Pendles previously or Cochin against the Lions that I could potentially go with, but I just don't think that they're going to get like a huge score that I'd be wanting to lock in ahead of Danger.
Yeah, Danger the V and Gaz to back it up on Sunday as captain.
The nice part about the buys is you can literally pick, you know, up to the last game of the round to have your VC and C's in because, yeah, your buy players can be used for the emergency or captaincy loophole right until the last lockout. So we get to really push it with Dangerfield playing the second last game and Ablett playing in the last game, but hopefully they score well. All right, that wraps up this week's show. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter to ask us questions on a Tuesday night. And we are on patreon.com/supercoachcoach for anyone looking to donate to the running cost of the show. And we are also going to record a season review show at the end of the year that will be exclusive to Patreon contributors. So if you're interested in that, you can donate to the show as well. Mark or Faz, anything to leave our listeners with for round 14?
Look, mate, super stoked to be in the top 1,000 this deep. I don't remember us sitting this close together this deep before. So that's a bit of entertainment. And pretty pumped for this week and pretty pumped that the Bombers will not be losing this week.
Faz?
Yeah, well, hopefully my ranking, I left it out at the start of the show. I think I'm at 18,000th right now, so that was 5,000 up this week. Hopefully it continues to rise the next few weeks over the buys, and probably won't be joining you guys in the top 1,000 from here, but hopefully something a little bit closer would be nice.
Anything can still happen with, what was it? Still 10 rounds to go, I think. But yeah, Mark, I don't think either of us expected to be sitting here because we've spent most of the season languishing in the thousands.
You have, yep.
Oh, yeah, you've been a bit closer, but we did spend, you know, I think the first 2 months, even you did, Mark, sitting around the 4,000 or 5,000 mark. So, yeah, it's certainly been a nice surprise, and in a month's time, we've penetrated the top 1,000 together. Hopefully, we can keep
so
it that
cute.
Way.
Yeah, it's great to share this experience with you, Marcus. It's really rewarding.
Yeah, well, I've got to try with Martin and Montagna to stay on the gravy train and cancel out those PODs, mate.
You will not be taking Cochin, though.
No, I will not. But I've got Selwood where you got Cochin. So go, Selwood. Go.
That does suck a little bit. Yeah. I can't bring him in. Like, I couldn't get Rocky and Selwood because of round 15. So hopefully you feel the burn in round 15.
Yeah. Anyway, that wraps up this week's show. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll catch you again for the last buy round next week. All the best, and we'll catch you then. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy.